Magical entities are not for sale. It was not by chance that young Claris drew the lucky card at Radpa's magic and joke shop and became his special aide. Well, officially the place was a candy shop, but most of the time the townsfolk of Abel and the savvy children knew better than that and looked at the man with either awe or admiration. Radpa was an eccentric creator, somewhat of an amusing fellow. He would delight his small audiences for hours on end with his unusual array of tricks, stories, and diversions. Few children were fortunate enough to witness his displays, for the shows were often not announced, nor were they easy to come by. Even fewer children were lucky to get a peek at his back room, a storehouse of banners, spangles, flying stars, floating whimsicals, and other manner of magical pop flashes, racked wall to wall, marvels, games, and all else in between, including sweet candy. Claris was one of those lucky ones, a thin and wiry girl, a precocious curly-haired 9-year-old, with a curiosity to kill a cat, a spry and eager youth, always in need of finding an outlet for her high energy. She was special, no doubt, but after her first glimpse of Radpa's magic room, he sent her home with a luminous candy circle. No ordinary sweet this was, for it had the colors of the rainbow embedded in rings about its fragrant roundness. The coils seemed to spring alive and swirl outwards like some crazy kaleidoscope. "Suck it until it glows," Radpa explained to her. "Then put it under the shade of the sleeping night tree." Claris did exactly that, and was surprised that she found a golden sumac the next morning. It was grown with emeralds and sapphire discs on its branches, with bright, shiny bells where long cones might appear. The little tree was almost neck high when she stopped by that morning and could not help but let her fingers tinkle some of its merry bells. They would chime with marvelous tones that had her clapping her hands, listening to music that came, of the golden fife and sounds of faint voices in the background, maybe of pixies who had wandered far from home. There was a hubbub in the town when Claris told the people about the wonderful tree, but when the grown-ups came round and found nothing except a withered husk of dead trunk and branches, Claris was given to sadness. She found the tree devoid of life and magic. Claris, despite her bewilderment, decided that if Radpa could make magic appear, then he could easily make it fade away. He only gave her an innocent look. As for the vanishing tree and its wondrous music, he did not comment on. In the glitter of an eye, she came to know more about the man than she had ever known. A jolly figure, somewhat round of face and long of chin, who wore bright spectacles, suspenders and a cloak and loafers, and who guarded a rich laugh that could delight anyone just hearing it. He shook his seaweedy, wax-yellow hair with a vigor that had it tumbling down the sides of his face like a ragged horse's mane. He was never to be taken seriously, Radpa. Truly, he didn't want to disappoint the children. Many of his first-hand gifts seemed to stir up the youngsters, make them angry or confused, even afraid. But that was there only to teach them some lesson beyond their regular schooling. Claris had been struggling with the lessons learned from the golden tree. What exactly were they? Radpa was an extraordinary man. He was welcome to continue to dazzle her and everyone forever. He loaned them his magic charms and toys, and Claris was allowed personally to tend his shop while he worked away in the back room on newer and more fabulous inventions. But these marvels were never for sale, only for loan, as he cautioned all who came in his shop, asking of their availability. Claris recalled any person who had tried to keep one of his knick-knacks, found the item missing the next day, or faded into a goo or paste or something unpleasant. Like Hanny's glowing jar of starfish that had transformed itself into sudden sludge when she went to shake it the next day, and Manfus's jeweled strongbox, which at first gave off a glorious light but then degraded to a dirt pile. For all this, Radpa was never given to explain his creations. His talismans were unique. No novelty of his was to be mastered by anyone or anything or put to improper use. With this in mind, he grew ever more industrious, keen to create unique things of marvel. One day he invited all the children to his first magic show of the year. It was in the main shop that Claris was to be his helper. Claris was ecstatic. She jumped for joy in her pink sandals, wishing to know how she could better help set up the spectacle, to which Radpa advised her with a smile that there was nothing to be done, that she should just relax and compose herself as best as possible. The magic show came in the evening of the 4th of March and was a great success. All the children were moved by the performance, flushed of face, adoring Clarice's professional handling of the event, all except Westner, the chubby youth who fell in love with a mischievous flying Werbat and wished to have it for his own. But Radpa firmly refused, explaining that the creature was still in its early phases of development. "A prototype, my dear boy. It cannot leave these premises." Westner was given to put up a sulk, and he had to be ushered out of the shop in an unceremonious way. Nevertheless, as a prize for her excellent services, Clarice was awarded a splendid conch, coiled and polished, smooth and shiny, and when put to an ear, told her marvelous secrets of the winds, the rains, and the living earth when it was in its beginnings. Clara's face lit crimson at the gift, and her mind was a fountain of excitement. She learned from the shell that the clouds were just messengers, truth-sayers of the skies, that each swirl and layer of mist and hue were just innocent words, or whole sentences, describing the great story of the cosmos. The more Clarice aspired to hear the conch's wisdom, the more the stories grew fainter to her ear, and became so ambiguous that she could no longer hear them. Clarice was devastated with the dwindling gift, and she tried to pry open the shell and force it to divulge its secrets. But whenever she attempted to jimmy its lid open, the shell grew only more feeble, until at last it gave way to the size of a pebble, and its clam-like lips fused together in a kind of strange, stony revenge. Clarice's memory returned to what Radpa had told her 2 days ago. "Clarice, wax the conch every day. Think only of its beauty. Think of its breadth of knowledge. Don't try to open it. The shell will tell you great truths, and it will unlock the mysteries of your desire." The distressed girl tried to wax the stone shell, buff it, but the damage had already been done. The conch refused to speak, even to her peers. Clarice threw it into a deep pool in the forest. With wistful regret, she forgot about it. There were sufficient marvels in Radpa's magic shop to explore, and this was not one of them. For this the old man did not disappoint. One rain misty day in March, a beautiful girl named Sidra trotted into Radpa's shop, dressed to the nines. Her little dog was in tow. Her heart's fancy was on an expensive fruitcake set under a polished glass display case. The cake was topped with hot toffee and macao cream. Radpa was busy on an errand in town, purchasing supplies for his new line of enchanted blagdorts, or something of the like, things with bells, whistles, lights, and lots of moving parts. Clarice was in charge of Radpa's shop. All the candy and the special security of the magic items were under her supervision. While administering some chocolate sprinkles to Sidra's cake, a few magic speckles got mixed in. Sidra struggled to hold back her craving and thrust her face in for a sultry bite of the dessert, but her nose began to itch, then grew to twice its size, glowing with a faint golden gray light, which turned off and on like a strobe. Clarice jumped back with startlement. "Sidra, you just gorged Radpa's magic cake. Be careful with your gulping in the future." Sidra's face was white with rage. She set a scathing glance at Clarice and blamed Clarice for her bloated nose and fled the shop crying while Clarice felt somewhat responsible. "Oh well," she thought. "A harmless side effect, I presume." She struggled with her guilt and went off muttering under her breath, sweeping the floor of its excess sprinkles. When Radpa returned, he was distressed to hear the news of Sidra's mishap and let out a soft sigh. "The effect will wear off, Clarice, but beware. Next time be more diligent when you administer sweets." The warning was somberly received, and Clarice could feel Radpa's rare display of displeasure all the more. "What about the magic?" "What magic?" pressed Radpa. "A stranger came yesterday, a dark man wearing a funny hat and a tangled beard, who wanted to buy the whole third shelf." "Did he now?" Radpa laughed. "My magic entities are not for sale, as you know. They are only for demonstration purposes." "I do, certainly," Clarice replied a bit sheepishly. Putting on a brave face, she continued to talk, as if she were admitting how foolish her questions were. But the hint of doubt straining the edges of her face reminded her of her own negligence that had caused Sidra so much distress. A duller pang reminded her also of the lingering loss of her conch. Within a year, Radpa had taught Claris many arts, that of dancing music, the capturing of singing lights, the reading of the riddles of the past and future, the exploration of the nature of the moon, that and the beauty of the skies, the writings of stars, the whisper of brooks, the pad of the stealthy deer. Claris was willing to learn more, and absorb the most knowledge she could, and she grew used to this new pastime, attending Radpa's store, becoming more adept at the magical natures and qualities of things of which she had no idea before. She glowed with a buoyancy she had never known, until at once she was so full and airy of life, she gleamed like a sun, and was as much a part of Radpa's magic shop as the old man himself. Sometime in July, Radpa thought it was time to give Claris a real test, one that would really challenge her for the things to come. He presented her with a series of strange metal bars, crafted in the form of a 3 interlocked triangles. The gift came wrapped and set on the table after she had completed a very lucrative day at the shop. She had sold much of Radpa's candy and had impressed him by describing in detail a whole line of his magic items, including whirling fruit, enchanted lutes, spinning crescents, rolling hoops, and talking animals, all items that filled Radpa's shop with light and sound, so characteristic of the old man's flair. Radpa held out his hands. He showed the 3 silver triangles intertwined, about a finger's length each, floating about 3 feet off the ground. They appeared in unusual synchrony, and not without a certain mystical profundity. Radpa's eyes seemed devilish, Claris remembered, which prompted her to suspicion. The metal came corded with a brass tine that was to strike the triangles whenever the owner felt fit. "Go ahead, try it," Radpa urged. He let the gadget fall in midair at about Claris's chest. The playful entity caused her to jump back with surprise, but also with marvel. She struck at one of the triangles. It resonated, hollow and tinny. Follow-up strikes revealed different notes, bright and sometimes sad sounding. The collection was a source of mystery. After a time, she could only shake her head in puzzlement. The next day, Radpa asked her about her success. "How have you been making out? Have you been rapping hard?" Claris hesitated. "I struck the metal 12 times, and each time gave a different note. When it started to warble like some giant quail, I was afraid to hit it anymore." Radpa's eyes rounded with mischievousness. "Intriguing." "Indeed," grunted Claris. "Well, have you uncovered its mystery yet?" "No, not yet. Why?" "Because your entity is your wonder destiny." "What's a wonder destiny?" She became alarmed and was slightly put out by the announcement. "The word seems rather pretentious." "It is indeed," laughed Radpa. "But do not make fun. Be more careful next time. Do not make the same mistake as you did with the conch." Claris grimaced at the memory and struggled with the triangles. She could never quite seem to make sense of their eerie wonder, or their scratchy tones. Sometimes the tinklings were altogether disturbing. She thought to hear voices in the midst, like Radpa's muffled laugh or his exuberant harumph, as if he uttered some nonsense through an enchanted horn deep in an underground cave. But she dismissed these as pure imagination. Claris did not know how the old shopkeeper affected his magic. She saw him one day hunching over his work table, mumbling strange words to himself as though he were conversing to the air, while he sought to fix a brass plate over a newly fabricated cuckoo clock. He seemed to have some command over sprites or magical entities. He swatted in the air, tried to catch some invisible or elusive imp, which, as Claris supposed, was why he called his creations magical entities. Nonetheless, she was introduced to this new line of curious magic in Radpa's meticulous fashion. Before him was a spyglass that could see right through people's character and deepest dreams. An odd gadget in the final analysis, one which gave Claris a start and gave way to a poignant tale, involving Karba, the milkman's son. When Karba came into the shop with his father to choose a toy or a game for his birthday, she saw through its lens a marked sadness written in the boy's face. Why? Claris was beside herself. The boy seemed handsome enough, and certainly not deprived. She wished to give Karba the magic toy of his choice, but she could not, knowing well Radpa's rules. No entity is for sale. And remembering what had happened the last time she had disobeyed Radpa's injunctions, Karba left the shop, and Clarice was tempted to run out after him, bearing an amulet or some small crystal that sang magnificent song, but she only did so with a double-tiered ice cream puff cake clutched in hand, which she paid for with her own money. She failed to see Radpa looking out the window after her, with a tear streaming down his cheek, as she proffered Karba the gift. In another person she spied through the glass, a certain Smilly, the Sanders' wife, Clarice saw mirrored only greed, the desire to possess all of Radpa's fabulous items, and for only a few doublins. Curse that Radpa's generosity, she heard the crotchety woman sneer in her head. The old loon never handed over a single gewgaw. In another person, Clarice saw great contentment, and she put the spyglass down after the fourth try. It was too much magic for her to fathom, and the visions hit too hard, revealing too many shadowy truths. One day an elegant, well-to-do woman came into Radpa's shop, her eyes gleaming at the merchandise, while she framed several haughty requests at the old man. We sell jokes, too, offered Clarice helpfully. The woman brushed Clarice aside. She went straight to the old man, who was blinking curiously behind the counter. With no pretense, she made a show of wishing to buy up all of Radpa's shop. Radpa smiled politely. My magic entities are not for sale. If selling is your hobby, madam, I advise you to open up your own shop and create your own line of merchandise. Bah, what do I need you to tell me that? Are you some kind of simpleton? In that case, replied Radpa. He put away his calipers with ceremony. You are best to consult with my assistant, Clarice. She will direct you in the finer points of candy and sweets. Would you prefer to read some of my marvelous jokes in this tome? Go away, the woman snorted, and while dawdling at the door, thumbed her nose, storming out in a fit, while Radpa was left laughing and winking at Clarice. On two separate occasions, important gentlemen came in to discuss business with Radpa, options and mergers of all kinds which Clarice could barely understand and found tedious. It was all regarding Radpa's wares and control over his shop. The candy, of course, will have to go, they counseled him. It is much too ordinary, an ineffective commodity. There is too much competition out there in the marketplace. Again, Radpa had to decline all such offers and franchise schemes, which had even his clever head swimming. Even if my objects were for sale, gentlemen, my candy has character, excellent character. It would be a shame for any to see it gone, or marketed by some person other than me, in mass volume. I shudder to think of what would happen should I be absent, or not its sole proprietor. I give these treasures the air and freedom they deserve. The businessmen seemed surprised and irked by the response, but departed with low grumbles. Clarice glanced sidewise at the old man. She learned a few new tricks for the day. Radpa was pleased with Clarice's grasp of his teachings and taught her ever more magic. She learned in swift order that to be innocent and open to new thoughts and ideas granted her greater access to the shopkeeper's wealth of knowledge. She was able to almost bait the magical fish in the aquarium, have them zigzagging about and singing songs in the form of bubbles, and loop the guiding rings on Radpa's new breed of flying pets. In 4 years, Clarice had familiarized herself with a wealth of material, and it was only after plump little Wessner returned to the shop again, demanding bundles of toys, that she had her first real upset. The boy demanded the most recent of Radpa's magical entities for his own collection. In payment, he held up a new silver doublin that his excellent uncle had given him as a Christmas gift. Clarice demurred. She smiled, her voice a facetious hum. She said all the proper things to the boy, but whatever she did, the brat seemed not to hear, and would always put on a sour face and give in to a tantrum, unsatisfied with what was on display. Clarice told the youth that she was tending Radpa's shop while he was away, and so she could never divvy out any of his magical items, only candy. Wessner continued to call for only the most novel and brilliant items of Radpa's in the shop, oblivious to her protests. Clarice was in a panic. How to get rid of the pest? She went out of her way to please him, dispensing a dublin's worth of candy and showing him various alternatives, but he would not be appeased. Radpa had told her never to go back in the workroom while he was away. Only with misgiving did she do so, pocketing the smallest, most unobtrusive object she could find, a small gift horse with a funny clown-like puppet hunching on its back. She brought it to the lad, who was rapturous with the new toy, and laid down his coin and departed in a hurry, a happy child, without bothering to ask how much extra candy he could squeeze out with the change. Clarice, distressed with her deed, knew full well that she had violated Radpa's trust, and she wondered how to break the news to him. She decided not to tell him. The course was not wise. When it came to Radpa's attention that Westner had taken a nasty spill and that his gift horse had grown to the size of a mid-sized pony and had thrown off its rider, he was more than displeased. Radpa's blue eyes, normally dreamy and merry, glazed over in an attitude of shock. He quivered, puffed out his cheeks, and shook a podgy finger at her. "I am baffled and disappointed at your defiance, Clarice. You know the rules. I have said many times that magical entities are not for sale." Clarice admitted as much, that it was all her fault and that she would take full responsibility. "It will never happen again, sir, I promise." "It's too late," he cried. "No excuses this time. You must make amends. Take yourself away from my shop, and do not return in less than a month, if you still have mind or interest in magic." Clary's lower lip trembled. It seemed a peevish punishment, but she could not argue with the old man, and she ran until her legs were numb. Through the streets, the parks, and out into the woods she fled, until her breath came in ragged gasps. She never disturbed Radpa's stash again, and strove to obey his wishes as angelic as a saint. It was a dreary month of moping about her parents' house, deprived of Radpa and his wonderful array of marvels. But when she returned, after 30 days had elapsed, she felt penitent enough that she had learned something important regarding following rules, and she thought that Radpa had forgiven her in a small way, but the cherry look in his eyes seemed never to lose its edge. Gradually the deed was forgotten, and Radpa once more asked Clarice about her progress with the triangles. Clarice shook her head. "'Tis useless. I can hear nothing, or sense nothing in these weird jinglings. Radpa, why do you give me such an impossible challenge?" The old man sighed. "What gives mystery to life is the challenge of the unknown. These toys are supercharged with a delicate energy, permeating the space between straps, bolts, and cloth, wire and metal alike. Can't you feel it? Why do you think I always use the term magical entities and not magical items? It is foolish to think that such treasures can be purchased by gold, or can be hoarded by a few. They can only be given freely. As you are here to witness magic, you will see that magic is ever illusory, at least the magic that I wield." "So how do you make your marvels work?" Clarice asked in wonder. Radpa gave a regal laugh. "That will be answered in due time, Clarice, when you solve the riddle of my triangles." Clarice almost danced with vexation. The old man's explanation told her nothing. It was the grandest thing about him, though. He was the first to tell her the simple, profoundest truth of all things, and the last to explain anything directly, things she would later turn over and over for years and come to understand in her own time. For a long time, Clarice pondered Radpa's words. Years passed, and Radpa languished. The old man did not die. A man such as he could not die as an ordinary man would, for he was not any mortal as any knew them. He only faded. Sparkles of dust effervesced around his ageless form. With nothing to hold on to, his blue and gray cloak fell to the ground, his skin shimmered and peeled. All that was left of him was a column of tinted air, a small figurine left standing on the floor, looking just like the old man, with rosy cheeks and glinting eyes. Clarice kept the figurine in a safe place. The old man was too dear to her to lose even his last memento. He had bequeathed all his wealth to her. Indeed, he had endowed all his dearest possessions to her, much to her joyous delight, and much to the spite of the townspeople, for they wanted some of the old man's wealth, but there was no argument. They could apply to the judiciary. Radpa left Clarice control of his shop, but alas, Clarice was to report to many a hopeful customer that magical entities were not for sale. Only could they be given, and only then when earned. Clarice had still not deciphered the mystery of the triangles. Perhaps this was what the old man's lesson was after all, that there was no answer to it, it was just some unsolvable mystery. A wry smirk crossed Clarice's wrinkled face, for she was very old now. Why hadn't she thought of that all these years? Radpa's test was just a diversion, a distraction, one designed to push her curiosity to the limits, against all the desires she harbored to definitely know what was the secret behind them. There was nothing to discover. There was no secret. They were just three metal bars that made weird sounds to enchant and delight listeners, and sometimes mystify them. And all this time, those cursed triangles. A lone tear came to her eye. Old Radpa, wise Radpa, mischievous Radpa. He was gone now, and he would always be dear to her. She was an old woman now, and ready to pass on. But she had grown wise in her years, and was at last seeking a special individual to transfer Radpa's teaching onto, a person who would be someone much like herself. One day she hoped to find that person. Without another thought, she set about creating a lucky card for some fortunate person at the magic show.